Welcome back, folks. Episode 23, Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we have Randy Johnson, U.S. Lamp out of Wisconsin. Guess what? Randy is the original lighting artist. That's right. If there was a designation in a book that said ultimate lighting engineer, it would have Randy Johnson's picture beside it. He's got it all, man. Assessing lighting systems, modeling them, energy savings, rebates, tax deductions. This guy does it all and it's nothing. He's built this custom software for himself. He's balling. So listen to this one. Randy's super smart. Greg and I both look up to him. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Yep, that's right. Go to KeystoneEtech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. Scotty, throw that thing up on the screen there for the YouTube watchers. What we're talking about today is their HID LED lamp replacements. Huh? Yeah, man. Direct drive, smart drive. You know the deal. Direct drive, you rip that ballast out, you run the line voltage right to the socket, and you slam in a direct drive. Keystone's got lots of wattages, from 50 to 400 watt metal halide replacements. Boom. Disconnect the ballast, slam the lamp in, fixture retrofitted. Almost 80% energy savings, 50,000 hours life. Come on, man. And if your customer doesn't want to get rid of that ballast, they just want to, geez, I just need this place LED right now, son. Do it right now for me. Okay, you go smart drive. Smart drive LED HID replacements work on almost all the ballasts that are out there. Okay, so all you do, you pull out that HID bulb and you screw in a smart drive and bam, 75% energy savings, 50,000 hours life. Hey, if the ballast burns out, well, you got to change an HID ballast. But you can take them from LED, from HID to LED like that. So if your customer wants fastest, quickest possible, you go smart drive. Your customer wants a longer term solution, you go to direct drive. Go to KeystoneTech.com and check out all their great products. KeystoneEtech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. Remember, this episode and every episode of this show is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Man, where do you think Randy learned his thing, man? Randy learned a lot of his stuff at Nailed. That's right. You want to be like Randy? Take an LS1. Slam an LS controls in after, and then go do your LS2. From there, you can get your LC. And in about 15 or 20 years, maybe you'll be a peer of a guy like Randy Johnson, which is a goal to shoot for in this game. Episode 23, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Randy.
Yeah, thanks.
Say hi to Greg Eric.
How are you doing, Greg?
Good, Randy. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Sure. So, Randy, tell us a little bit about U.S. Lamp.
U.S. Lamp is a full-line lighting distributor. So we don't do pipe and tools and motors, that type of thing. We're strictly lighting, but we carry over 100 manufacturers of lighting products. So we carry most of the major manufacturers of fixtures, bulbs, ballasts, lenses, controls, that type of thing. So our emphasis since the late 80s has really been on doing a lot of design build project work. So we go to the customer's place of business, and typically are working with the end user customer 98% of the time for existing building structure. And we'll do detailed energy audits. We do photometry, lighting design. I teach classes, as you and I have been talking about earlier. So I do a lot of that in a multiple number of states since about 2000. So our emphasis is really on trying to go to market, building the correct solution so that they're properly lit as a starting point, and then work to the most efficient equipment that's affordable and that fits their budget.
So has your business changed much during this LED boom, or is it just a switch of technologies for you?
It really hasn't changed in focus at all, just in changing technologies from typical high-performance fluorescent or, you know, higher-performing metal halide, pulsed metal halide, ceramic metal halide, that type of thing, into, you know, the LED technologies that are kind of taking over everything.
See, I think you're the only guy that can say that in this business.
Yeah. Yeah, it really hasn't changed our thrust at all.
Wow.
Or the focus of how we go to market or how we build solutions. So we've been doing that process since the, like I say, late 80s, early 90s.
Did you guys transition away from replacement lamp supply, or do you guys still doing a lot of replacement lamps and ballasts and stuff like that?
We are, but I think probably everyone in distribution is seeing that business wane as people are changing more and more to LED technology. So to me, this is very similar to the early 90s. In Wisconsin, rebate programs started to hit our state in the late 80s, early 90s through individual utilities. And every customer that called for a case of lamps was an opportunity to say, hey, do you know there's more efficient light sources out there? And there's some rebate monies available through your local utility. So that started the whole process of dialogue with the customer on, okay, what's my payback? What's the value? What's the benefit of changing this that I'm currently using to this, which is supposedly more efficient, longer lasting, better color quality, et cetera. So I'm seeing an attrition, and I've talked to other distributors around the country about this, as well as folks like yourselves, that I think with the evolution of LED, the whole replacement market is migrating away from the volume business to a long-term solution. So, you know, hopefully for the customer, you do it right the first time because they're going to live with it for a long time. But that's what we're seeing.
So how do you guys convey your message? Go ahead.
I was going to say, so we're still doing replacement business, but every customer that comes in, we explain to them that, you know, just so you're aware, this particular product could be replaced with this. And then we get into color discussions and energy discussions and rebate discussions. And so again, it's kind of an education process for the customer.
And your sales right now, as mine are, basically payback stories. Is that correct?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's like every request from a customer becomes a proposal. So, you know, you go through that discussion and that analysis. And so it's, you know, occasionally, I mean, we still have customers that come in every day and say, hey, I need a case of this or a case of that. And we always make them aware of it at the counter. And if they want to pursue it further, we'll give them a card and say, you know, if you're interested in pursuing that, then certainly give us a call. We'll stop out and look at the application. And many of them say, yeah, no problem. Let me think about it. And we may hear from them a month, 2 months, 6 months later. Everyone is moving that direction.
Do you think there's a point where payback won't be the story that you sell in lighting?
Long term, I think so. And I think it would be at the point where maybe these rebates start to dwindle and go away. And we're probably approaching that longer term because the costs of the products are continuing to de-escalate. So, you know, as more and more acceptance in the marketplace with LED occurs, there's more units per machine, the amortization cost per unit goes down, so the cost in general goes down. Higher volumes by the manufacturers increase their buying capability for chips and, you know, the components that they build the fixture out of. So all those dynamics are going on, and I think that's driving the price down. There are some fixtures now that we're seeing that were the price of standard fluorescence, you know, five, 6 years ago. So at that point, you know, I don't know how long the utility rebates will last. I'm sure to some degree they'll be around for a long time, but their thrust is market transformation. So as the market accepts current LED technology, there's no reason to incentivize it. It's the norm. And
right.
So then the payback story becomes much less.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot at Nailed conferences and things about just quality lighting and how do you convey that message of quality lighting to your customers and how do you differentiate yourself from a low-priced option?
Well, we try and bring them a lot of factual data. We've got a project right now where a customer was brought a inexpensive high bay fixture in LED. We can't download a photometry file to even see how it performs because that manufacturer doesn't publish anything. So that tells me something. And so we've got a meeting set up for next week with this customer. So I've documented, we've taken our particular fixture, which is a major manufacturer's version, in a narrow, medium, and wide distribution. And for his manufacturing site, based on his mounting height and so on, we've run three photometry calculations and done it thermally with color and then done it with foot candle printout so that we can show him if we go to a narrow distribution, your average foot candles are slightly higher, but you have puddles and pockets. And we can show that thermally on the printout of the software to show them conceptually what we're talking about. That relates to shadows. So if they're assembling machinery and vertical illumination is important and you put a lighting system that creates shadows, you're going in the wrong direction. The competitor, we can't even compare it because there's no photometry file. They're giving them a 10-year warranty and they've been around for about 3 years. That begs a pretty serious question.
The promise is promises, Randy. The promise
right.
is promises.
Yep, and you can promise anything until you have to deliver. So we're going to just expose those various questions and say, what are your thoughts? You know, here's what the industry says. Here's what the experts tell us when we go to training. You know, be very leery of a two-year-old manufacturer that wants to give you a 10-year warranty. They have no track record to stand behind it, as opposed to a 100-year-old manufacturer.
Yeah, and what percent of the time do you provide photometrics for your proposals or in your proposals?
40% of the time. Yeah, okay. Maybe 40%.
What about you, Greg?
I would say it depends on the application, but maybe 25% of the time. So not often. I don't have in my own department like Randy does or the system. I rely on the manufacturers to provide that information.
Yeah, I usually get the manufacturers to do it, but I don't like bringing manufacturers into my proposals. I'm always a little bit suspicious about those guys. And, you know, you have a sales rep or whatever. I've always found that the manufacturer reps or the sales reps, you know, I always felt like they were spies. And if I was doing something good, they're going to go tell their other customer, hey, you know, Colligan's doing this thing where he's doing X, Y, and Z, and you should do it too because he's being very successful with that. So I'm a little bit leery about sharing it with them. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I don't want to start doing photometrics. It's interesting. We just had a conversation with the president or CEO of Standard Products up here in Canada. And I think he's looking for the type of distributors that Randy is. You remember on the show, Greg?
Yeah.
Like people that are really looking for that value sell, Randy. So you're sitting there, you're sitting back, and you're bringing them that intelligent sale. You're bringing them, here's the issues with what you're thinking of. Here's what I think is better. That's what you're doing every day, eh?
Yeah. We started doing photometry design in-house in 1993. Ooh. We were doing some large projects in a couple of states, and we would sketch something up, fax it at that time, which was kind of the fastest mode of communication, to a factory. They would do a design, send it back in a week. We'd look at it for 30 seconds and go, this is a gym. There's a curtain down the center, and they didn't pick up on that, and they've got fixtures laid out in the center. Mm-hmm. So then we'd resketch it, send it back again, and it would take another week to turn it around. So when I talk to customers all the time, one of the reasons we carry a huge number of product lines, and it took a number of years to get those manufacturers to feel comfortable using us, because they know we're not going out bidding stuff on the street. We're designing and building our own solutions. So it's a different piece of the market. But when I talk to a customer, one of the things we tell them is that because we have so many product offerings to choose from, we're product neutral in many cases. So, you know, we use Lithonia, we use Hubble, we use GE, we use Osram Sylvania, we use GE for lamps, and, you know, a variety of people, Keystone, you know, there's a lot of good manufacturers. But in being able to do the photometry in-house, I can compare three manufacturers at the same time in the photometry. And I can look at a GE, Hubble, Lithonia, Cooper, whatever, and see how they compare. We've got a request that just came in this week for a municipality. They've gotten two quotes from some other people. My salesman talked to them, and they said, well, yeah, we'd like a third proposal. They're quoting them a 15,000 lumen exterior shoebox fixture at 18-foot mounting height. We think that's going to be way overkill as far as blasting too much light under the fixture.
That's a huge problem.
Penetrating. That's so a we're huge running problem. Photometry. Yep. Yeah. So we just that's went on Google problem. Earth yesterday, downloaded their site so we can do a design of that parking lot because we didn't have a sketch or a CAD drawing. So we're doing that more from a bid request because we think they probably have the wrong solution. We want to give them the right solution and say, here's why we're different. So we use those tools to illustrate that objectively.
Okay, so don't come to Toronto and compete with me, please.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Say, on the photometry side of things, do you ever get the request to do it on existing fixtures? You're going to retrofit that fixture and put LED in it?
If we can find a photometry file for the bulb, we've done that on a few occasions.
Like a high bay fixture or something.
Yeah, what I'm thinking off the top of my head is some track lighting, where we had some applications, higher ceiling mount track lighting, but we could get a photometry file for the retrofit bulb, so we ran some calcs to show them what they would get out of the product.
Hmm. Okay. Your typical customer, so it's interesting because I deal mostly in my project work with industrial and commercial property managers and industrial general manager of the factory or whatever. And I've largely avoided the municipal bid spec and bid process simply because I don't have the tools and the knowledge that you have, Randy. But I think that's the key to winning that business, is really being able to demonstrate to the client look, here's the problem with what this engineer is like, reverse engineering a proposal for them and say, cause you know, I'll look at a train station, say, in Ontario, and you'll see some LEDs they put in, and they have these giant hot spots below the light, and there's the dark spots in between, and you clearly somebody didn't know what they were doing when they were specifying that luminaire. Is that what you're doing? You're reverse engineering a lot of specs that come your way from engineers, or how exactly are you getting to the bottom line with this?
In some cases, yes. If we see kind of a glaring misfit that we think we can improve upon, we'll definitely pursue that direction. To me, there's, you know, it gets blurred in our industry, but to me, there's two concepts. One is bidding. And to me, if I'm going to bid something, someone at the customer level is giving me the specific data. Yes. I want 24 of this fixture with these bells and whistles. Give me a price. To me, that's a bid. If someone calls me and says, I have a pool and I want to change this from metal halide to LED, give me a solution. That's a design build. When we get into that arena, we will ask them as a minimum for a confidentiality letter where they won't give our work away. Or if there's significant engineering involved, we'll ask for what we call our letter of intent, which is a design fee letter that we will charge them X amount of either cents per square foot or a flat dollar amount. We have a church right now that has a letter in hand. We're charging them a flat amount based on the square footage that we're looking at. We have a couple other customers that I'm going to audit one tomorrow where it's cents per square foot. But they still have to keep the work confidential. If they do the work with us, we waive that design fee or we reduce it significantly. So it depends on the nature of the project. If they want to put it out on the street and bid it, we can do that as well. But then we charge multiples of that design fee and we're strictly selling them engineering. So we've done both. The university system in our state has to keep those two components separate. So we've done design engineering work for them where we were the engineer of record, strictly bill them for engineering. And then contractors took those specs and bid that exact solution. And in some cases, they've come back and gotten pricing from us, and we've provided the product as a distributor. But it's kind of two separate functions. So we're an anomaly. We kind of are a hybrid between a distributor supply house and an architectural engineering firm. And I tell customers that all the time because there's really multiple services we can offer. Depends what they want.
So you're actually using your LC for what it was meant for.
Yeah. And I'm licensed with the state as a designer of engineering systems, so I can stamp drawings for state submittal calcs. So that along with the LC kind of goes together very nicely. So, yeah, so those credentials, being involved with Nailed, all those kinds of things that separate us, as you asked earlier, from the typical vendor in the market knocking on the door saying, hey, I can give you that cheaper. Well, there's a gazillion things that are cheaper. It's really what's, to me, the right solution for any customer is giving them the proper foot candles, the proper bells and whistles without under delivering or selling them a lot more than they need. And the vendor, in my mind, it's no different than buying a software package. If you've got 10 accounting packages and you're calling on a hospital, there's going to be one that's probably the best fit for their systems, their size, the number of locations. So the vendor that can best evaluate those 10 systems and say, out of these 10 accounting softwares, this is the best fit for you for these reasons. To me, that's the value of the vendor. The parts and pieces are what they are. And you can get them from hundreds and hundreds of LED manufacturers. But the vendor that can take a look at what your application is and grab all of those and take the best of this and the best of this and the best of this and give you the best solution for the best price. It's not the lowest price. It's the best value for what you're buying. And to me, that's the difference. And I tell customers that all the time. We're not going to you to be the cheapest or the most expensive. I don't really care what the price is. You know, this is what you need to fit this bill. Does it fit your budget? Great. If it doesn't, we can value engineer it, but then you're going to get less than maybe you wanted originally. We have that right now for a theatrical application for an elementary school. They have a budget. We put numbers together, provided the labor through a contractor. It's a little higher than what they wanted. So I said, we can downscale it, but this is what you're going to give up. This is what you're going to give up, et cetera. And he's like, whoa, I don't want to do that. I said, well, let's see if you can have some people install part of it as volunteers for your parish and have the electrician do the electrical aspect that needs to be done by a licensed company. And he was fine with that. So he cut his number by 40%. They're like, that's awesome. Let me go back to the board and see if we can find some volunteers to do the hard mounting, which isn't electrical. It's just mechanical mounting of hanging truss, hanging the fixtures, plugging the cords together because they're all DMX cabling, mm-hmm. like microphone cables. That doesn't need to be done by an electrician. So sometimes it's a matter of kind of reskinning the cat a different way that fits the customer's need.
It's interesting. Yeah, you want to go ahead, Greg?
No, you go for it.
It's funny because you've taken what was basically a lamp supply business and you've turned it over into a consulting firm where your customers are coming to you for the knowledge sale. They're coming to you for guidance for, especially in the new LED environment. I think that's an important thing. When did that transition start for you, Randy? Like, when did you sit back and say, you know what, I'm tired of this. I want to be able to add more value to this process. I want to be able to really help my customers. How, like you said, you were in the 80s or whatever. When did you start with that?
Actually, the day we bought the business, which was January of 1986, because US Lamp was a lighting only distributor that I called on when I was a GE factory person of about 22 to 23 distributors and three OEMs. So it was a good fit for me at the time because they only did bulbs and ballasts, and that was my background for GE. Then as I bought the business, the first thing I realized was he was doing small fixture projects and he was buying them through another distributor. So we started chasing fixture lines, and we went to several fixture schools, Hubbell Lighting, Holophane Lighting, GE Lighting, a variety of different people. So it was kind of a crash course for me to get educated on fixtures in the mid-80s, but that was the goal because my training from GE to call on distribution was really, how do you sell this energy-saving fluorescent at $299 when they can buy an F40 Kuwait for $125?
Mm.
So how do you, well, because that $299 bulb will save you $7.80 in energy at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it might last longer or give you, equivalent light output, et cetera, et cetera. So it was taking the values of those products. Why would I spend more on a product? Well, if it gives me a lot more in return, it's a great deal. So that bulb philosophy translated into kind of a business philosophy on how to go to market.
Nice. Now, one of the big reasons we've had you on here is we had a podcast with Daniel Audette from Energy Tax Savers, and he gave us a good overview, and we gained some knowledge out of it. But you're real world. You're in our area every day. You do what we do. So tell us what you do in terms of the tax savings and the credits that are out there.
We've actually been using that since 2006 when it came into existence. It was signed in 2005 by President Bush, went into effect in 2006. It was a two-year thing. In 2007, they extended it for 2 years, then they extended it to 2013. So it keeps getting bumped. I called Jennifer Bernardini, who was the author of that bill in Washington, D.C. in 2005, because it needs to be signed off by someone. And we had LCs at that time, but there were only about 1,100 of us in the country, according to her at that time. Because I said, do I have the ability to sign off and verify the form? And she said, no, there's not enough of you. And we wanted to find someone that was licensed by state and there were lots of. So she said they zeroed in on electrical contractors and engineering firms. So it needs to be a licensed engineering or contractor firm in the given state that the implementation took place in. So we work in concert usually with the electrician that does the install because we don't do our own installs. So they can sign off on it. We do all the technical workup because all my data and my software that we built over the years, we record rooms by square footage and existing load, proposed load. So when we get done with a project, we do an as-built. So if we have a contractor room by room report that prints that out. So it tells the contractor, this is what's in there, this is what's going in there. It also has a square footage and all the energy load. And if we're saving kilowatt hours for sensors, it has sensor credit calculations. So when we do that, we do the as-built, there are certain rooms that won't qualify because they have to be dual switched, individual office with one switch and two fixtures typically won't qualify for EPAC. So we'll delete the rooms that do not qualify. All the rooms that are left, we'll copy that project, delete out the non-qualifying rooms. The net result calculates our square footage and the total watts per square foot and energy load instantly. So that becomes the backup for the tax deduction. And then we will get a letter of allocation from the customer that, we'll call them and say, as a school, you're neutral. You don't pay tax. But as the designer of the solution, we have the opportunity to apply for a tax deduction for your project. Are you okay with that? Yeah. normally they have no problem because it doesn't affect them. So they'll sign off on the letter as step one. We'll go in and do a post verification as step two. Then we'll have the electrical contractor review and sign off as step three. Send it to our accountants as step four.
You took that that office example, and your form has the ability to deduct that cost out too, because you can only give a tax deduction on the cost of the areas that qualify.
Yes. So if we remove a room, the material gets removed, the energy gets removed, and in the summation area of our software, the product gets removed. So as we delete rooms, it's all we have to do, and everything else calculates on its own. So it becomes a great tool, and it's 100% accurate.
And that's the 60 cents a square foot calculation model. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. And if you're doing, because we're using, the watts per square foot and the wattage reduction calculation method. If you're doing a building modeling method for multiple technologies, then you can get up to $1.80 per square foot.
Yeah. Dan was saying a lot of guys, like, you were leaving money on the table with the 60 cents a foot. Is that true?
Well, I think in some cases we could be. We did a project with a roofing company where, because we were doing a couple of technologies, he had someone that they used to do building modeling. So we were able to claim $1.80 per square foot. We split it between each of us. So we got 90 cents per square foot instead of 60. But to do that is beyond my capability, because I'm trained in lighting. And if they're doing building modeling, there's specified software packages that do HVAC calcs and all the other things that are involved with multiple technologies. So then you hire an engineering firm like Energy Tax Savers. So yeah, there could be, but quite frankly, we've had so much tax deduction, I'm still trying to use some of it, which has been fortunate. But
you need to make more money, man.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's the challenge. So,
oh man.
But it's been a great tool. But we've been involved with it since its inception. So we've had lots of projects over those years. You know, so it's been a great tool.
Do they carry forward? Do the deductions carry forward? Okay.
Yes.
And that's a corporate. Is that a corporate tax deduction or a personal tax deduction?
Well, I'm an SC, so it drops to the personal level in that realm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you factor that in? Do you factor that into the how you price the proposal then? When you go up against competitors?
Oh, no. I don't, because I've had two schools over the years that have said, we want you to build that in and we want you to apply that to the price. And I said, I'm not interested in bidding on your project for a couple of reasons. The tax deduction, it's April 15th is coming up. If I did a project last January, I won't get the value of that deduction until this April 15th.
If they discount
want the deduction in February when they pay their bill.
Yeah.
The second thing is, if I'm bidding the project, I have no idea what's going to qualify at that point because I don't know what's being changed. Things change in the field. You know, that's why you do as-builts. Or the customer may decide not to do an area, or they ran out of funding, so let's take this piece of the wing and we'll do that next year. So there's all those variables that can come into play. So I've told them, if you want that up front, I'm not your man.
Do people do that?
Because I've heard of that for a short period of time, but I saw it come up for about 6 months in our state, and then it disappeared. And I think it was because people were starting to realize, you know, I'm giving you a discount, hoping I might take a discount in the future. And then you have the time value of money besides.
So that's the credit where you actually get the advantage. Do you still work with customers where they get the advantage?
Yes,
in other words,
absolutely.
People that pay tax?
Yeah, where this comes into play is public sector K-12 schools that we do a fair amount of work in. In individual entities, absolutely. We'll make them aware of it, and we'll show that. We did an insurance company retrofit. They got $125,000 tax deduction on top of the rebates, on top of the energy savings and everything else that was involved with the project.
Wow.
So we made them aware of that, and they were like, this is awesome. So again, that just solidifies the value you're bringing to them as a vendor by giving them information that they probably had no clue of. So
now, when you did that,
talk to them about that.
When you take that project and the amount of time you have to put into figuring out the square footage of every room, did you have them sign a letter of intent, or I don't remember what you called it, confidentiality or design build?
Yes.
Okay, so you had some fees built into that to begin.
Yes. And we use laser tapes and a variety of equipment as part of our audit process. So we're just in the mode, and we've got forms set up to gather all that data in a very systematic fashion. So we always audit in a team of two. When we walk in the room, one of the people has the clipboard and the map, and they're highlighting each room as we go through, and the other person is taking foot candle measurements. We can shoot that square footage in 10 seconds, not even 10 seconds. So you're shooting length, width, boom, you've got it. And you just shout it out, they write it down. So by room, we're recording those pieces of data. Then the next step is to look up and audit the equipment, catalog the equipment that's in there. There's four lamp troffers and two recessed down lights with 65 BR30s in, or track, or whatever it be. And we want a sensor, and we want to put it in this corner. So we make footnotes of those things. And the type of sensors are wall sensors, a ceiling passive infrared, dual technology, whatever. So by room, we're gathering all that data, then we go to the next room.
That's a much longer process than walking around and counting light fixtures.
Absolutely. We count 12,000 square feet per hour with a team of two. And I've measured that for 12,000. Years. That's our benchmark. So if someone says I got 100,000 square foot building, I can tell them it's 8.3 hours times two people. So I know if I've got 250,000 square feet, I'm going to be there for 2 or 3 days. So we can factor that all in, make the customer aware we're going to need hotels, we're going to have to get room, you know, rooms, meals, et cetera. So they know some of the impact of the expenses that are part of that. We'll charge a design fee plus travel. So they know some of that value before we go into it. So that way there's no hidden issues. They have a pretty good, pretty accurate representation of what that's going to mean to them if they choose not to do it. And if they do, then, you know, then it's kind of taken care of.
Oh, so these tax deductions on that benefit the customer, in other words, the for-profit businesses, do you run that on every audit you do?
No, we'll make the customer aware of it and then let them come back to us. And we'll charge a separate design fee for that. So they get the tax deduction, but we're going to charge them a design fee because then it's strictly man hours that we have to gather this data and do this and manipulate this. And we have to have someone sign off on it, typically the installing contractor. So we'll tell them, you know, we've done it for buildings as small as 10,000 or 12,000 square feet. And we've done that insurance company, which is about 500,000 square feet.
Dan Audet asked us if I'd made a point that it depends on how they're accounting for their lighting system to see whether they're going to qualify. Can you lay that out for Greg and I, Randy?
You know, that's probably something I don't have a great deal of expertise in. That's why we'll typically tell them, here's the deduction that's available, depending on if they're amortizing it as capital improvements over 39 and a half years, or if they've got it set up with cords and plugs and they can remove them. I think then they can write it off at a much quicker, it's more of an expensed item.
Sure.
But that's an accounting thing that we always tell them, talk to your accountant because they're the expert and they know how you're running your business and how those expense items are set up. And then they'll come back and go, sometimes they'll come back and say, nah, we talked to our accountants, they said it's not worth us pursuing, or absolutely, what do we need to do as a next step? So we let them ride the bus.
No. Well, you'll go into facilities then and analyze for a deduction after the work has already been completed?
I think we've only had one case where we did that, where we didn't do the work. But we were hired by an engineering firm to go into a Fortune 500 industrial manufacturer in Illinois, actually. So they hired us to come in and do that technical workup. They were licensed in that state, so they could actually stamp the work, but they didn't know how to gather the data. So, and I had done a week of training for them in Michigan. They were in lower Michigan, and they have satellite offices in about 5 or 6 states. So I did a week of training for them on energy conservation, lighting design, and all that, because they wanted to get into some of that realm. And then about 6 months later, they had this for one of their customers that they did engineering for that wanted that tax deduction. And so we spent a full day with three of us doing the post-inspection, counting fixtures, looking at foot candle levels, because there's several requirements. It has to meet IES recommended practice. It has to have dual circuitry, which is kind of a misnomer, because if you're on multiple breakers, it qualifies. It's not dual switching as we would traditionally define it for an office or a classroom. It just can't be all on, all off. And then it has to meet certain watts per square foot, which is based on the tables that were set forth in that EPAC
legislation. I have a little bit of a problem here. Before I started this podcast, I felt like I knew what I was doing.
Well, again, I guess I'll take that as a compliment.
So I think the DOE should hire you to run their lighting department, Randy. That's pretty impressive stuff. And maybe even help them write legislation. No, help them write legislation. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I often talk about when we're talking to, you know, some of the, I call them the higher ups, and I'm not talking about a hierarchy, but, you know, some of the guys that, you know, are, you know, philosophically thinking about the lighting industry and stuff like that. And then you know, guys like yourself and Greg and I are in the trenches. We're in front of the customer every day, and they're relying on us for the knowledge. And they're talking price. They're talking what they need. They're confused. They have no idea who the new brands are in the business as Philips exits and goes to Signify and GE and Sylvania and all these guys. And so I often find that the guys that actually have the most specific quality knowledge are the guys in the trenches, the guys that are doing the work every day. They know the laws the best. Sure. They know the ins and outs. How can I think this industry needs to, and this is what this podcast is really about, and I think this is why it's been successful, is that I think the industry needs the feedback from us. And like the DLC didn't have any distributors on their advisory panel until, you know, Nailed shook them. And the IES is looking at
Greg and I are the two distributor members on that panel.
Exactly. So.
That's right.
And I would say that, you know, you guys are probably the two most valuable members in terms of actual specific knowledge from the field and talking about what are customers saying? What are people saying that are buying this stuff? What do they think? And I think, is there a way that we could channel this knowledge back up to the IES? I mean, do you have any ideas on that?
Well, I think, you know, the DLC, I just got involved with it at the start of this year. So the first quarterly meeting that we had, because of the weather that Boston was getting, we did via Skype like this, or actually kind of a webinar. But part of that discussion, I sat back for a long time because the vast majority of them are, there's a couple of design customers, Jim Benya from the West Coast,
sure, and Jim, Phil
from the East Coast, certainly very knowledgeable people.
Yes, of course.
But most of them are large, medium, and small manufacturers. So there were areas where, for example, I gave this as a comment to the DLC board, was that I was at a trade show about a month ago, had one of our factory reps bring in a programmable fixture that could be done via your phone. Oh, it's easy. Just log in, boom, boom, boom. Well, we logged in here in my conference room and found out, well, it's actually only Android-based. It's not iPad or Android-based or, you know, iPhone. Okay, so we borrowed an Android phone from one of my employees. Oh, it's got to have an infrared connection port so it can communicate and log in initially.
Sure.
Well, that phone didn't. We borrowed another one. That one didn't either. So if I had brought that to the trade show, or one of my sales folks had brought that to a customer and said, oh, this thing is easy. It's great. You're going to love it. Everything is easy when you know it, but learning it or not knowing it makes it a real challenge. And so this wasn't nearly as user-friendly as the manufacturer would like to think it is.
And not only that, though.
So I brought that up.
Yeah, not only that, though, but there's also software compatibility issues, right? So, for example, if you're running Android Marshmallow 4.2 and the incumbent system was put in 4 years ago, and now that operating system wasn't upgraded for that or whatever, and you don't no longer have that phone. Like a perfect example is with Apple, if you have a device that's more than 5 years old, you can't go on to the Apple parent control with that device and control your children's devices with it because it's not compatible with the software they built to do that. And so I think the lighting industry is running into this thing a little bit naive in terms of the compatibility issues between you know, people's consumer electronic devices and how they're going to interact with a lighting fixture that's planned to be there for 15 years or 20 years. You're going to have that same Android device that's compatible with that. And Android's going to be moved on far away from that in 10 or 15 years. You're going to have to be downloading compatibility packs. Like if you have an XP computer or a Windows 2007 computer, it doesn't work with Excel DocX or whatever it is. And you got to download some compatibility thing to switch it back into this. The lighting industry hasn't really had those kind of issues put in front of it. And I think everything right now in that, in terms of that, is basically, oh yeah, everything's possible, except it didn't have the infrared port, except it didn't have the software capability. Oh, my iPhone doesn't work with it. Oh, my, this version, these problems have never been in the lighting industry before. And right. I don't know how that is going to play out in terms of a lot of these systems and whether they're going to be useful to customers or not. I think it's an open question right now. Really, I think it is. Yeah.
In talking with customers, and I'm doing a session tomorrow for a group of technical college facilities people in Wisconsin. And, you know, they're all looking at automating, and many of those tech colleges have energy management systems and so on. But right now, I think the biggest hurdle is the incompatibility and the lack of standardization. Everyone's got a different protocol. Everyone has a different mm-hmm. operating system. Yep. Everyone has a different communication bus that they try to talk to their fixtures and the other ones don't talk to it. And just dimming LED, you know, trying to define is, are these products, this is on a compatibility list, this is on a compatibility list that they say they'll work great. You put them together and they don't work, or they buzz, or they do different things.
Sure.
We had that with a ballast manufacturer. The five-year-old wing we retrofitted with some TLED lamps, and it worked great. The newer wing that was a year and a half old, which the ballast and the lamp were both on each other's compatibility list, is working fine, buzzed like crazy. I called the manufacturer's tech support and said, do we have a defective issue? And they said, well, how do the fluorescents run? I said, well, they work fine. Well, no, then it's not defective. I said, well, then why aren't they compatible? Can't tell you. So they couldn't do that wing, even though it was the newest wing and should have been the most likely to be compatible. And it was major manufacturers, two major manufacturers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's those quirky things that are not going to go away in the short term. I think long term, hopefully they will. But I think standardization, you know, DLC is working more on standards for all of this interface protocol and things like that. They're becoming, I guess, kind of the benchmark for all the utilities to look at, and they have been for a long time as far as rebates, but I think they're becoming the benchmark, certainly because of the lighting facts program going away at the end of March because of funding. So there's no more lighting facts program. So DLC is going to have to provide the data and the studies and the testing and so on to create benchmarks that these products will either be that level or higher or that level or lower. So yeah, it's a challenge. There's no doubt.
And it's never going to get to the point with the DLC qualifications that, I mean, it does matter in terms of rebates, and that's about it though, right? Is it ever going to be anything more than just a rebate sale?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think they're aspiring to want to do that. Yeah, time will tell whether they have the resources, right, and the interest and the time to be able to pursue all of that.
Yeah,
it's a challenge. I mean, it's the burden really is on the customer to say, this is what I've got, this is what I want to do with it. Find me something that works.
I got a question for you.
It's case by case.
I got a comment and a question. So anytime you introduce complexity, you introduce cost. Mm-hmm. Anytime. I know that from multiple different technologies. So you introduce another level, another engagement with it beyond that you put a bulb in it and there's a light switch or a sensor or whatever. So sensors introduce complexity. Addressability introduces complexity, and so on. You introduce cost. How many customers out there do you think, short term or long term, are really interested in addressable lighting systems?
I think right now it's relatively small. We've done some exterior lighting projects with addressable fixtures that have worked well, and they love it. But they're a pretty cutting edge, large company. So they're trying to integrate this across all of their locations. But I would tell you, it's a small percentage. And, you know, when I look at studies, DOE and different folks have published some slides actually that I use in some of my presentations that talk about where they project this stuff to be in year 2035. And certainly they expect controllability and controlled lighting technologies to be expanding. But there's still going to be a large core of product that people just aren't going to want or need to control. And part of its complexity. The one thing that comes to my mind when you mention that is complexity equals opportunity.
So equals cash, buddy.
Yeah, as distributors, if we're knowledgeable and can help the customer figure that out right the first time instead of trial and error, I mean, how frustrated do you get when you bring your car in and it's not running right. Well, let's throw this in there. Well, that didn't solve it. That was $150. Well, let's try this. You know, and they start with hopefully the least expensive, but they just keep throwing parts at it till it works, mm. or you get tired of paying money. Customers in lighting are going to feel the same way. So if you can go in and analyze it thoroughly on the front end, give them the right solution, in the long run, you're spending less money, even if it's a more expensive first investment than putting in the wrong solution and trying to do it over and fix it.
So what that's if, the hardest message for us to convey, though. I think yeah. we talked about this on our podcast earlier. Is just is that is a lot of people look at the price and they don't consider everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So I think it's just we have our you know education.
Yeah, we have our best success, and I tell customers this every day. The more educated you are as a customer, the better I think our opportunity is to do business together because you will understand what we're putting into the solution. If we can't get in front of the buyer or if it's a board and we don't go to the board meeting, it boils down to the common denominator of this is 20 grand and this is 22 grand. They got to be the same. So take the cheaper yep. one. And they're never the same. There's literally, you know, if you look on the DLC list, there's over 6,000 4-foot T-LEDs.
Yeah,
on
sure.
that list. And that's sure. one item. So, you know, I use that as an illustration to tell customers, none of this is the same. You know, a car isn't a car. A car could be a Yugo, it could be a Bentley, and everything in between. So unless you define the specifics, say give me a price on a car, you're going to give me a price on the Yugo because you want to write the business.
Well, the other thing too is I'm not so sure that the lighting industry really knows what's good and what isn't yet. You know, I mean, I know Randy Johnson is, you know, a professional, but by the same token, there's a sense that, you know, we don't know how long these LEDs are going to last, the drivers are going to last, whether it's actually good. The manufacturers themselves don't know for sure. They're making basically new fixtures every 6 to 8 months, right? So maybe their version 4 is better than their version 6 for some reason they don't even know yet. You know, so I don't know. I'm not sure that. You know, you say you buy a Bentley. Well, you know, an Audi A8 is better engineered than a Ford Taurus, say, right? But the price reflects that. In lighting, I'm not so sure if that's always true, you know, whether or not the price reflects what reflects the value, you know?
I think to some degree it always does. But, yeah, you could be paying premiums for a name or you could be paying premiums for a concept that maybe isn't of value to that customer. But... yeah, I think in the long run, it's going to flush itself out, but customers are going to be paying the price in the process. You know, so the less research they do, the more likely they could get burned by picking a solution that might not be right. And that's the challenge. That definitely is the challenge.
And for both of you guys, do you guys run into customers that have made the mistakes and you're coming in now to fix them?
Sure.
With LED?
I'll tell you a little anecdotal story. So we went into this one auto parts plastic injection molding factory up here in Toronto, and I went in for the first call, and then it was really big, so I put one of my people on it to do not as good an audit as Randy would do, but we did a thorough inspection of the facility, and they wanted some controls and this sort of thing, right? And when we were in there, we noticed that they had done several areas in LED and that they were burned out, like, or half burned out, or there were several fixtures that were half the LED array had gone out. I don't know if you've seen this a lot where you see half of an array out and the other half is on and stuff like that, right? And, you know, they wouldn't even let us in for the presentation. They're like, we provided our quote. We put a lot of work into it. And, you know, here's the issues you have. This is how we're not going to have those problems moving forward. This is how we're going to do the, you know, the controls where you want them and so on and so forth. And the guy wouldn't give us a meeting after we provided the proposal. So I called the president of the company and I said, look, man, I'm the president of this company. You're the president of that company. Give me 5 minutes. I spoke to the guy for 5 minutes and he kept going back to price. He kept going back to the price. He's like, well, you know what? We were looking for the best price. And I said, well, did you get the best price last time? Because you had a problem. And the guy wouldn't hear. He, like, the message was not being received, if that makes sense. You know, and it wasn't being received by him. And I thought, I sat back after I put my phone down and I said, like, this guy's going to walk into the same thing again. And I was shocked by that. Like, if I was exploring a software and some president of a company called me up and he said, look, I don't care what you do here, but here's the problems you have, and here's why you might want to take a closer look at my proposal. I'd probably listen to them for a little bit and maybe take a second look. They didn't want to hear anything of it. They were after the lowest price. We want to go LED, and maybe people have different reasons for this. Maybe selling the company, maybe, you know, whatever. But I just thought to myself, like, that's a customer that Randy wouldn't want to do business with right there, right? He wouldn't want to, you know, engage with that company.
Yeah, I just made the note that sometimes those are the customers you want your competitor to have.
Yeah.
So that they consume their time, they spend their effort, they go through all the frustration to not write the business, and you're off doing business with customers that want to engage as partners. That's the difference. You know, there's the mentality of give me everything that I want as cheap as you can, or let's work together to give me the best solution that I should have.
Hmm.
And that's a different mindset. And so the challenge as distribution or as salespeople in general is to find the customers that you can engage with that understand how you're going to market. If we go to market very technically and they don't want that, we're not a good fit. And I shouldn't chase that because I'm wasting my time.
Sure.
Because I'm not going to market to be the low price guy, or I need to give you a low price product. But if that's got pitfalls, we just had a customer this week that wanted to look at some TLED bulbs. And we quoted him on a major manufacturer's product. And he went to the local do-it-yourself center because they were 40% less, but they weren't DLC listed. They were 36,000 hours instead of 50,000 hours. When I took a pencil to it, just cost for cost, he was paying the same amount for 50,000 hours of life.
Yeah.
And he gave up $6 a bulb for delamping, which he wants to do. And he gave up $4 rebate per bulb. And he can't put them on the ballasts because he's going to overdrive them and burn the product out, and there will be no warranty. So we're now back in. So we pointed that out to him, and now he's like, geez, I didn't realize any of that. I was just looking at the price. So now we're back in discussion to try and get him to consider a better product that will give him much more benefit. And that cheaper bulb was $11.70 more in energy cost over the life of the bulb.
There you go.
So it more than paid for the cost of the bulb, let alone all those other benefits.
Sure.
So it's a value benefit proposition. You have to really, you know, that goes back to selling versus order taking.
Hmm.
And selling
I do
is
both.
An education process.
Yeah. We do both.
Selling is an education process. Order taking is a begging process.
I'm a beggar sometimes. True.
Well, it just depends on how you want to go to market.
Sometimes
it's not that it's good
depends.
Or bad. It's just different. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Let me ask you one more question. When you did that outdoor lighting where you said that people were very happy with the addressability and that, did you commission the software for them as well and train them on the software?
We had the manufacturer who had a great tech support department actually work directly with them. So the installing contractor, we had them record. We put a grid matrix together for them of each pole in five lots and each fixture on each pole so that we could assign the address from the node to that specific location. So every fixture on every pole was numbered in a sequential order with the address to it. We could then send that to the manufacturer. The manufacturer kind of populated it for them and then communicated back and forth via their tech people with the electrician to make sure things were properly commissioned. So, you know, it was certainly... We helped in the organization of gathering the data and the communication back and forth, but we depended on the tech support department of the manufacturer to give them the technical data to make it work.
Hmm.
And it actually worked real well. I mean, they had a couple of failures of this and that, but we were able to identify it easily because of real-time information that's gathered.
Sure.
And the factory was very good at getting them replacement components, and so they've been pretty happy with it.
All right. Whew. What do you think, Craig? Is that a podcast?
I think that is. That was real good information.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So I guess we'll say thank you for coming on the show, Randy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is the first time I've done a podcast. I've done webinars and things, but this was a little different and certainly very interesting.
Keystone Technologies, man. Go to KeystoneTech.com. KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. Look at those HID LED lamp replacements. They got them in direct drive and smart drive. Let's go over it. Direct drive, what do? You disconnect that ballast, you run the line voltage directly to the socket, and you slam in the direct drive. They got lamp replacements from 50 to 400 watt metal halide. We're talking almost 80% energy savings, 50,000 hours life, boom goes the dynamite, man. Direct drive. Or if your customer's being a little bit funny, they don't want to pay for any electrical work, or they just need that fixture LED toot suite ASAP, go smart drive. What does a smart drive do? You just take out the HID lamp and put in the smart drive. Compatible with most HID ballasts out there. Again, what do you get? Almost 80% energy saving. Almost 80%, son. 50,000 hours life. Go to KeystoneTech.com. KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. And come on. You know the drill. National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Man, Randy, you want to be like Randy? You want to meet Randy? You want to talk to Randy? Come on down to the convention. Join the club. Come on, man. Go to nailed.org, N-A-I-L-D.org. That's the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. It starts with education, man. That's what Randy bought into, the education side. He learned and learned and learned, and now he's one badass lighting dude, man. That's all I can say. And we thank him for coming on the show. Hey, Randy, props to US Lamp up in Wisconsin. Hope to see you real soon at Light Fair, Randy. And for the rest of you guys, peace.